Jorak. Jorak touched the screen on the far wall, flicking the news feed out of the way. A few swipes of his fingers and there was footage playing on the screen. The sights moved in from far away, showing an amphitheater with a cage of white light across its gaping top. The seats in the amphitheater were full, the lower rows on stone benches and the higher rows on metal ones, and it was clear from the somber faces that this wasn't a celebration day. The sights narrowed around a platform suspended over the seats in wood and metal. Rizek stood on top of it, polished from his black shoes to the armor that covered his chest. His hair was freshly clipped, showing off the bones in his head, the sheen of his scalp. Sizi and Issei sat back at the sight of him, both at once. Akos was past fear of Rizek now, had long since moved into pure revulsion. Standing at Rizek's left was Vas, and at his right,
Aija, Sizi breathed. Why?
He's been brainwashed. Sort of. Akko said, careful, and Jorak snorted. The sights panned left to the edge of the platform where soldiers surrounded a kneeling woman, Syra. She wore the same clothes he'd seen her in days ago, but they were torn in places now and dark with blood. Her thick hair covered her face, so for a tick he wasn't sure if Rizek had taken out one of her eyes. He did that when a person was disgraced sometimes, so they couldn't hide it. Syra lifted her head, showing off a few purple-blue bruises and a dull, two-eyed stare. Then Rizek spoke.
Today I bring difficult news. Someone we thought to be one of our most faithful, my sister, Syra Noavec, has revealed herself to be the worst kind of traitor. She has been collaborating with our enemies across the Divide, providing them with information about our strategy, military, and movements.
He doesn't want to admit that there's a real renegade group out there, Jorak said, over the roar of disgust from the crowd. Better to say she's collaborating with Thuvazits.
He chooses his lies well, Issei said, and it didn't quite sound like a compliment.
Rizek continued.
I have also recently uncovered proof that this woman, he pointed at his sister, conveniently showing off the line of kill marks that went from his wrist all the way up to his elbow, is responsible for the death of my mother, Illyria Noavec.
Akos covered his face. There was no worse blow Rizek could have dealt Syra than this. She'd always known that.
I confess that my familial attachment has obscured my judgment in this matter. But now that I have learned of her betrayal and her...
Rizek paused.
Her vicious murder of our mother. My vision is clear. I have determined that the appropriate level of punishment for this enemy of Shotet is execution by way of Nemhalzak.
When the footage shifted back to Syra, Akko saw that her shoulders were shaking, but there weren't any tears in her eyes. She was laughing. And as she laughed, the current shadows danced, not under her skin like blood running through veins, but on top of it, like smoke around a thurible. They had done the same thing the night Rizek forced her to hurt Akos, floated away from her body in a haze. Her current gift had changed. Rizek nodded to Vas. Vas crossed the platform, drawing the knife at his back. The soldiers around Syra stepped aside for him. Syra smirked at him and said something inaudible. Rizek said something inaudible back, stepped close, and leaned in, his lips moving fast over words no one else could hear. Vas grabbed her by the hair, forced her head back and to the side. Her throat was exposed. Vas angled the blade over it, and as the knife dug in, Akos gritted his teeth and looked away.
You get the idea, Jorak said. There was silence as the footage stopped.
What did he do?
Akko said roughly.
He scarred her,
Tekka said. Took all the skin from throat to skull. Not sure why. All the rite requires is flesh. Mutilator's choice. She drew a line from the side of her neck up to the middle of her scalp.
Akos felt like he might throw up.
That word he used, I don't know it, Ise said. Nemhalzet?
Nemhalzak, Jorak said.
It's the elimination of someone's status, perceived or actual. It means anyone can challenge her to the arena, to fight to the death, and it means she's no longer formerly considered Shotet. With all the people she's hurt at his behest, and all the people who loved her mother, well, there are plenty of people who want to challenge her. Rizek will let as many of them do it as it takes to kill her. And with that wound in her head, she's losing blood fast, Tekka said. They put a bandage on it, but obviously that's not enough for what he did to her.
She'll fight all those challenges in the amphitheater?
Akko said.
Most likely,
Tekka said. This is supposed to be a very public event, but that force field will fry anything that touches it. Akos talked over her. Obviously you have a ship, or you wouldn't have been able to dump me on that hospital landing pad.
Yeah,
Jorak said. A fast, stealthy one, too.
Then I know how to get her,
Akos said. I don't remember agreeing to some detour rescue mission, Ise snapped. Particularly not for Rizek Noavek's little terror. You think I don't know the things she's done, Karaseth? The rest of the galaxy hears plenty of Shotet rumors.
I don't care what you think you know, Akko said. You want my help getting any further?
You'll wait for me to do this first. Ise crossed her arms, but Akko's had her, and she seemed to know it. Are offered Sizi and Ise a spare room upstairs, and a cot on the floor in Jorak's room for Akos. But judging by the look Sizi gave her brother as they reached the top of the staircase, she wasn't about to just let him leave. So he followed her into a little bedroom with a big, bulgy mattress in it and a furnace in the corner. Multicolored light spotted the floor, sunset burning through the windows. He took off his armor there, but left the knife in his boot. There was no telling what would happen here. Akos felt like Vas and Rizek were around every corner.
Is... Bata, Sizi said. Why don't you clean up first? I need to talk to Akos.
Ise's head bobbed and she left, nudging the door shut with her heel. Akos sat down on the bed next to Sizi, blue and green and purple dots of light marking his shoes. She put her hand on his wrist.
Aija, was all she said.
So he told her about all the memories Rizek had poured into Aija, and all the memories he had drained, about the new words Aija used and the way he spun a knife on his palm just like Rizek did. He didn't tell her how Aija had watched while Rizek hurt Akos, not once, but twice, and he didn't talk about how Aija had used his visions to help Rizek. There was no reason for her to lose hope.
That's why you didn't try to escape, Sizi said softly.
Because you needed to kidnap him to do it, and that's harder.
Near impossible is what it is, Akos thought.
That, he said, and what kind of future do I have in Thuva, Sizi?
You think I get to be the first one in the galaxy to defy his fate?
He shook his head.
Maybe it's better if we just see the truth. We don't get to be a family anymore.
No. She was very firm.
You didn't think you'd ever see me again, but here I am, right? You don't know how fate finds you, and neither do I. But until it does, we get to be whatever we can be.
She put her hand in his and squeezed. He saw a little of their dad in her arched, sympathetic eyebrows and the dimple in her cheek. They sat there for a little while, their shoulders touching, listening to the splatter of water coming from the bathroom across the hall.
"What's Syra Novak like?" she asked him.
"She's..." He shook his head. How could he describe a whole person like that? She was tough as dried meat. She loved space. She knew how to dance. She was too good at hurting people. She had gotten some renegades to dump him in Thuva without Aija because she hadn't respected his goddamn decisions. And he was stupidly grateful for it. She... Well, she was Syra.
Ceezy was smiling.
"You know her well. People are harder to sum up when you know them well."
"Yeah. I guess I do.
If you think she's worth saving, I guess we all just have to trust you on that," Ceezy said. "Hard as it is."
Issei came out of the bathroom, her hair wet but pulled back in a tight knot, like it was lacquered to her head. She wore a different shirt, another one of their mom's, embroidered at the collar with little flowers. She shook out the other one, wet like she'd washed it by hand, and hung it over a chair near the furnace.
"You've got grass in your hair," Issei said to Ceezy with a grin.
"It's a new look I'm trying," Ceezy said in response.
"It works for you," Issei said.
"Then again, everything does, doesn't it?"
Ceezy flushed. Issei avoided Akos's eyes, turning toward the furnace to warm her hands. There were a couple more people crammed in the low, dim room with the flaking walls when Ceezy, Issei, and Akos went downstairs again. Jorik introduced them to Sovi, one of his mother's friends, who lived just down the road and wore an embroidered scarf in her hair, and Gio, who wasn't much older than him, with eyes that looked a lot like Issei's, suggesting some common ancestor. He was playing an instrument that lay flat on his lap, pressing buttons and plucking strings faster than Akos could follow. There was food on the big table, half eaten. He sat next to Ceezy and shoveled some food on his plate. There wasn't much meat. It was hard to come by out here outside of Voa, but plenty of salt fruit, which was filling enough. Gio offered Issei a fried feathergrass stalk with a big smile, but Akos snatched it before she could take it.
"You don't want to eat that," he said, "unless you want to spend the next 6 hours hallucinating.
Last time Gio slipped someone one of those, they wandered around this house talking about giant dancing babies," Jorik said.
"Yeah, yeah," Tekka said. "Laugh all you want, but you would be scared too if you hallucinated giant babies."
"It was worth it, whether I will ever be forgiven or not," Gio said, winking. He had a soft, slippery way of talking.
"Do they work on you?" Ceezy asked Akos, nodding to the stalk in his hand. In answer, Akos bit into the stalk, which tasted like earth and salt and sour.
"Your gift is odd," Ceezy said. "I'm sure Mom would have some kind of vague, wise thing to say about that."
"Oh, what was he like as a child?" Jorik said, folding his hands and leaning close to Akos's sister. "Was he actually a child, or did he just sort of appear one day as a fully grown adult, full of angst?"
Akos glared at him.
"He was short and chubby," Ceezy said. "Irritable. Very particular about his socks."
"My socks?" Akos said.
"Yeah," she said. "Aija told me you always arranged them in order of preference from left to right. Your favorite ones were yellow."
He remembered them. Mustard yellow with big woven fibers that made them look lumpy when they weren't on. His warmest pair.
"How do you all know each other?" Ceezy asked. The delicate question was enough to dispel the tension that had come up at Aija's name.
"Sovi used to make candy for all the village kids when I was little," Jorik said. "Unfortunately, she doesn't speak Thuvazit very well, or she'd tell you about my misdeeds herself."
And I first met Jorik in a public bathroom. I was whistling while I...
Geo paused.
Relieved myself, and Jorik decided it would be amusing to harmonize with me.
He did not find that charming, Jorik said.
My mother was a kind of leader of the revolt. One of them, anyway, said Tekka. She came back to us from the colony of exiles from the Noavek regime about a season ago, to help us strategize. The exiles' support of our efforts to end Rizek's life. Issei's brow was furrowed. It was furrowed a lot of the time, actually, like she didn't like the space between her two eyebrows and wanted to hide it. And this time, Akos understood why. The difference between exiles and renegades, and the connection between them, wasn't of much interest to him. All he wanted was to make sure Syra was safe, and to get Aija out of Shotet. He didn't care what else happened there, but to Issei, Chancellor of Thuva, it was clearly important to know there was a swelling of dissent against Rizek, both inside Shotet and outside.
How many of you renegades are there? Issei asked.
Am I likely to answer that question? Was Tekka's reply. The answer was clearly no, so Issei moved on.
Is your involvement in the revolt why...
Issei waved a hand over her face.
The eye.
This? Oh, I have two eyes. I just like the patch, Tekka said.
Really?
Sizi asked.
No,
Tekka said, and everyone laughed. The food was plain, almost bland, but Akos didn't mind it. It was a little more like home, a little less like Noavek finery. Tekka started humming along to Geo's song, and Sovi drummed on the tabletop with her fingers, so hard Akos's fork rattled against his plate whenever he set it down. Then Tekka and Jorik got up and danced. Issei leaned over to Geo while he was playing and asked,
So, if this particular group of renegades is working to rescue Syra, what are the other renegade groups doing? Hypothetically, I mean.
Geo narrowed one eye at her, but answered anyway.
Hypothetically, those of us Shotet who are low in status need things they can't get, and they need someone to smuggle it in for them.
As in...
Hypothetical weapons, Issei said.
Possibly, but that's not top priority.
Geo plucked a few wrong strings, swore, and got himself on the right ones again. Top priority would be food and medicine. Lots of runs to Othir and back. Gotta feed people before they can fight you, right? And the farther out of the center of Voa you get, the more diseased and starved people are.
Issei's face tightened, but she nodded.
Akos didn't think about it much, what was going on outside the tangle of Noavex he'd gotten himself into. But he thought about what Syra had said about Rizek keeping supplies to himself. Doling them out to his people or hoarding them for later, and he felt a little bit sick. Tekka and Jorik spun around each other and swayed. Jorik surprisingly graceful, given his gangliness. Sizi and Issei sat shoulder to shoulder, leaned back against the wall. Every so often Issei gave a tired smile. It didn't quite look right on her face. It wasn't one of Ori's smiles, and she wore Ori's face, scarred though it was. But Akos figured he would have to get used to her. Sovi sang a few bars of Geo's song, and they ate until they were warm and full and tired.
Chapter 29 Syra. It was difficult to sleep after someone had peeled one's skin off with a knife, but I gave it my best effort. My pillowcase was soaked with blood that morning when I awoke, though I had, of course, lain on the side Voss had not flayed from throat to skull. The only reason I hadn't bled to death yet was that the gaping wound was covered with stitching cloth, a medical innovation from Othir that kept wounds closed and dissolved as they healed. It was not meant for wounds as severe as mine. I stripped the case from the pillow and tossed it in the corner. The shadows danced over my arm, pricking me. For most of my life, they had run alongside my veins, visible through my skin. When I woke up after the interrogation, a soldier had told me my heart stopped, then started again of its own accord. The shadows were traveling over the surface of my body instead. They still caused me pain, but it was more bearable. I didn't understand why. But then Rizek had declared Nimhalzak, and had Voss cut my skin away from my body like the rind from a fruit, and forced me to fight in the arena. So I was in just as much pain as usual. He had asked me where I wanted it, the scar. If it could even be called that. Scars were dark lines on a person's skin, not patches. But Nimhalzak had to be paid for with flesh, and it had to be on display, readily visible. With my mind addled by rage, I had told him to scar me the same way he had scarred Akos when the Karaseth brothers first arrived, ear to jaw. And when Voss had accomplished that much, Rizek told him to keep going. Get some of her hair, too. I breathed through my nose. I didn't want to throw up. I couldn't afford to throw up, in fact. I needed all the strength I had left. As he had every day since I self-revived, Aija Karaseth came to watch me eat breakfast. He set a tray of food at my feet and leaned against the wall across from me, hunched, his posture bad as ever. Today his jaw bore the bruise I had given him the day before, when I tried to escape on the way to the arena and managed to get a few hits in before the guards in the hallway dragged me away from him. I didn't think you would be back after yesterday, I said to him. I'm not afraid of you. You won't kill me, Aija replied. He had drawn his weapon, and he was spinning the blade on his palm, catching it when it made a full rotation. He did it without looking at it. I snorted. I'll kill just about anyone. Haven't you heard the rumors? You won't kill me, Aija repeated. Because you love my delusional brother far too much for your own good. I had to laugh at that. I hadn't realized that silky-voiced Aija Karaseth read me so well. I feel like I know you, Aija said suddenly. I suppose I do know you, don't I? I do now. I'm not really in the mood for a philosophical discussion about what makes a person who they are, I said. But even if you are more Rizek than Aija at this point, you still don't know me. You, whoever you are, never bothered to. Aija rolled his eyes a little. Poor misunderstood daughter of privilege, says the walking garbage can for all the things Rizek wants to forget, I snapped. Why doesn't he just kill me anyway? All this drama beforehand is very elaborate, even for him. Aija didn't answer, which was an answer in itself. Rizek hadn't killed me yet, because he needed to do it this way, in public. Maybe word had spread that I had helped with an assassination attempt, and now he needed to destroy my reputation before he let me die. Or maybe he just wanted to watch me suffer. Somehow, I didn't believe that. Is giving me useless cutlery really necessary? I said, stabbing my toast with the knife instead of slicing it. The sovereign is concerned that you will try to end your life before the appropriate time, Aija said. The appropriate time? I wondered if Aija had chosen my manner of death then. The oracle, plucking the ideal future from an array of options. End my life with this thing? My fingernails are sharper. I brought the knife down, point first, on the mattress. I slammed it so hard the bed frame shuddered, and let go. The knife fell over, not even sharp enough to penetrate fabric. I winced, not even sure what part of my body hurt. I suppose he thinks you're creative enough to find a way. Aija said softly. I stuffed the last bite of toast into my mouth and sat back against the wall, my arms folded. We were in one of the polished, glossy cells in the belly of the amphitheater, beneath the stadium seats that were already filling with people hungry to watch me die. I had won the last challenge, but I was running out of strength. This morning, walking to the toilet had been a feat. "How sweet," I said, spreading my arms wide to display my bruises. "See how my brother loves me?" "You're making jokes," Rizek said from just outside the cell. I could hear him, muffled, through the glass wall that separated us. "You must be getting desperate." "No, desperate is playing this stupid game before you kill me just to make me look bad," I said. "Are you that afraid that the people of Chotet will rally behind me? How pathetic." "Try to get to your feet and we'll all see pathetic," Rizek said. "Come on. Time to go." "Are you at least going to tell me who I'm facing today?" I said. I placed my hands on the bed frame, gritted my teeth, and pushed myself up. It took all my strength to swallow the cry of pain that swelled in my throat, but I did it.
"You'll see,"
Rizek said. "I am eager, and I'm sure you agree, to end this at last. So I have arranged for a special contest this morning." He was dressed in synthetic armor today. It was matte black and more flexible than the traditional Chotet variety, and polished black boots that made him appear even taller than he was. His shirt, collared and white, was buttoned up to his throat, showing over the vest of armor. It was almost the same outfit he had worn to our mother's funeral. Fitting, since he intended for me to die today.
"It's a shame your beloved couldn't be here to watch," Rizek said. "I'm sure he would have enjoyed it."
I replayed it all the time now, what Zosita, Tekka's mother, had told me before she walked to her execution. I had asked her if it was worth it to lose her life challenging Rizek, and she had told me yes. I wished I could tell her that I understood now. I tipped my chin up. "You know, I'm having trouble figuring out how much of you is actually my brother these days." When I walked past Rizek on my way out of the cell, I leaned closer and said, "But you would be in a much better mood if your little plan to steal Ija's current gift had worked." For a moment, I was sure I could see Rizek's focus falter. His eyes touched Ija's. "I see," I said. "Whatever you tried to do didn't work. You still didn't get his gift."
"Take her away," Rizek said to Ija. "She has some dying to do."
Ija prodded me forward. He was wearing thick gloves, like he was training a bird of prey. If I focused, I could walk in a straight line, but it was difficult, with all the throbbing in my head and throat. A trickle of blood, well, I hoped it was blood anyway, ran over my collarbone. Ija pushed me through the door to the arena floor, and I stumbled out. The light outside was blinding, the sky cloudless and pale around the sun. The amphitheater was packed with observers, all of them shouting and cheering, but I couldn't make out what any of them were saying. Across from me waited Vas Kuzar. He smiled at me, then bit his chapped lips. He would make himself bleed if he kept that up.
"Vas Kuzar," Rizek announced, his voice amplified by the tiny devices that hovered over the arena.
Just above the lip of the amphitheater wall, I could see the buildings of Voa, stone patched over with metal and glass, winking in the sun. One, outfitted with a blue glass spire, almost blended into the sky. Covering the arena was a force field that protected the place from harsh weather and escape. The Chotet didn't like our war games to be interrupted by storms and cold and runaway prisoners.
"You have challenged the traitor Syra Noavec to fight with current blades to the death."
As if on cue, everyone roared at the words "traitor Syra Noavec," and I rolled my eyes, though my heart was beating fast.
This is in reaction to her betrayal of the people of Shotet. Are you ready to proceed?
I am, Voss said in his usual monotone.
Your weapon, Syra, Rizek said.
He drew a current blade from the sheath at his back and flipped it in his hand so I could take the handle. His sleeve was rolled up. I approached him, willing the current shadows to build within me, beckoning the pain that came along with them. My skin was dusted with dark lines. I moved like I was going to take the knife's handle, but instead, I clamped my hand around Rizek's arm. I wanted to show these people who he really was. And pain always did that. Took the insides out. Rizek screamed into his teeth and thrashed, trying to throw me off. With all the others, I had simply let my current gift go where it wanted to, and it always wanted to be shared. With Akos, I had pulled it back, almost ending my own life in the process. But with Rizek, I pressed it toward him with all the force I could muster. It was a shame, really, that Aija was there so soon, grabbing me and dragging me away. Still, the damage was done. Everyone in this arena had heard my brother scream at my touch. They were quiet, watching. Aija held me back as Rizek gathered himself, straightening and sheathing the knife. He set a hand on Voss's shoulder and said, only loud enough so Aija, Voss, and I could hear,
"Kill her."
"What a shame, Syra," Aija said softly in my ear. "I didn't want it to come to this." I twisted free as Aija walked out and backed away, breathing hard. I had no weapon, but it was better to go out this way. By not giving me a current blade, Rizek had just shown everyone in this arena that he wasn't giving me a fair chance. In his anger, he had shown fear, and that was enough for me. Voss started toward me, his movements confident, predatory. He had always disgusted me since I was a child, and I wasn't sure why. He was as tall and well-built as any other man I had ever found appealing. A good fighter, too, and his eyes, at least, were a rare, beautiful color. But he was also covered with accidental bruises and scratches. His hands were so dry, the thin flesh between his fingers was cracking. And I had never met a person so empty. Unfortunately, that was also what made him so frightening in the arena. Strategy now, I thought. I remembered the footage from Tepes I had watched in the training room. I had learned the lurching, unsteady movements of their combat when my mind was sharp. The key to maintaining control of my body was to keep my center strong. When Voss stepped to lunge, I turned and tripped to the side, my limbs swinging. One of my flailing arms hit him in the ear, hard. The impact shuddered through me, sending a wave of pain through my rib cage and back. I winced, and in the time it took me to recover, Voss had swiped. His sharpened blade carved a line in my arm. Blood spilled on the arena floor, and the crowd cheered. I tried to ignore the blood, the stinging, the aching. My body pulsed with pain and fear and rage. I held my arm against my chest. I had to grab Voss. He couldn't feel pain, but if I channeled enough of my current gift, I could kill him. A cloud passed over the sun, and Voss lunged again. This time I ducked and reached out with one hand, skimming the inside of his wrist with my fingers. The shadows danced over to him, not potent enough to affect him. He swung his knife again, and the point of the blade dug into my side. I moaned and fell against the wall of the arena. Then I heard someone shout, "Syra!" A dark figure hoisted itself over the arena wall from the first row of seats and dropped to the ground, knees bent. Darkness crowded the edges of my vision, but I knew who he was just by watching him run. A long, dark rope had dropped into the center of the arena. I looked up to see, not a cloud covering the sun, but an old transport vessel made of an array of metals, honeyed and rusty and as bright as the sun, hovering right above the force field. Voss grabbed Akos with both hands and slammed him up into the arena wall. Akos gritted his teeth and covered Voss's hands with his own. Then something strange happened. Voss flinched and dropped him. Akos sprinted to my side, bent over me, and wrapped an arm around my waist. Together we ran toward the rope. He grabbed it with one hand, and it jerked up, fast. Too fast for Voss to grab. Everyone around us was roaring. He shouted into my ear, "I'm going to need you to hold on by yourself." I cursed at him. I tried not to look down at the crowded seats below us, the frenzy we had left behind, the distant ground, but it was hard not to. I focused instead on Akos's armor. I wrapped my arms around his chest and clamped my hands around the collar of it. When he released me, I gritted my teeth. I was too weak to hold on like this, too weak to support my own weight. Akos reached up with the hand he had been using to hold me, and his fingers approached the force field that blanketed the amphitheater. It lit up brighter when his fingers touched it, then flickered and went out. The rope jerked up hard, making me whimper as I almost lost my grip. But then we were inside the transport vessel. We were inside, and it was deadly quiet. "You made Voss feel pain," I said, breathless. I touched his face, ran a fingertip down his nose, over his upper lip. He wasn't as bruised as he had been the last time I saw him, cowering on the floor at my touch.
"I did," he replied.
"Ijo was in the amphitheater. He was right there. You could have grabbed him. Why didn't you..." His mouth, still under my fingers, twitched into a smile.
"Because I came for you, you idiot."
I laughed and fell against him, not strong enough to stand anymore.
Chapter 30. Akos. For a tick, there was only her weight, her warmth, and relief. And then everything came back. The crush of people in the transport vessel, their silence as they stared, Issei and Sizi strapped in near the nav deck. Sizi gave Akos a smile as he caught Syra around the waist and picked her up. Syra was tall and far from dainty, but he could still carry her. For a while, anyway. "Where are your medical supplies?" Akos asked Tekka and Geo, who were coming toward them. "Geo has medical training. He can take care of her," Tekka said. But Akos didn't like how Geo was looking at her, like she was something valuable he could buy or trade. These renegades hadn't rescued her out of the goodness of their hearts. They wanted something in return, and he wasn't about to just hand her over. Cyrus' fingers curled around the armor strap on his rib cage, and he shivered a little. "She doesn't go anywhere without me," he said. Tekka's eyebrow lifted above the eye patch. Before she could snap at him, which he got the sense she was about to, Sizi unbuckled herself and made her way over. "I can do it. I have the training," she said, "and Akos will help me." Tekka eyed her for a beat, then gestured to the galley. "By all means, Miss Kariseth." Akos carried Syra into the galley. She wasn't completely out of it. Her eyes were still open, but she didn't seem there either, and he didn't like it. "Come on, Novik, get it together," he said to her as he turned sideways to get her in the door. It wasn't quite steady on the vessel. He stumbled. "My Syra would have made at least 2 snide remarks by now." "Hmm," she smiled a little. "Your Syra." The galley was narrow and dirty. Used plates and cups piled around the sink, jostling each other whenever the ship turned, lit by strips of white light that kept fluttering like they were about to go out. Everything made of the same dull metal, dotted with bolts.
He waited as Cece scrubbed the little table between the two countertops and dried it with a clean rag. His arms ached by the time he put Syra down.
Akos, I can't read Shotet characters.
Neither can I, really. The supply cabinet was organized, all the individually packaged items in neat rows, alphabetical. He knew a few of them by sight, but not enough.
You'd think after all that time in Shotet you'd have learned something,
Syra said from her place on the table, slurring the words a little. Her arm flopped to the side, and she pointed.
Silverskin is there, antiseptic on the left. Make me a painkiller.
Hey, I learned a few things, he said to her, squeezing her hand before he got to work. The most challenging lesson was how to deal with you. He had a vial of painkiller in his bag, so he went out to the main deck again and hunted for it under the jump seats, glaring at Geo when he didn't move his legs right away. He found his roll of leather, made of treated armored one skin, so it was still hard, not exactly a roll. Where he kept his spare vials and found the purplish one that would help Cyrus Payne. When he went back to the galley, Cece was wearing gloves and ripping packages open.
How steady are your hands, Akos? Cece asked.
Steady enough. Why?
I know how to do the procedures, of course, but I can't really touch her because of the pain, remember? At least, not as steadily as she needs me to. This is delicate work, she said. So I'm just going to tell you what to do.
Dark streaks still traveled up and down Syra's arms and around her head, though they were different from the last time Akos had seen them, dancing on top of her in jagged lines. Syra croaked from the table.
Akos, is this...
My sister? Akos said.
That is.
Syra, meet Cece.
It's a pleasure to meet you,
Syra said, searching Cece's face. For resemblance, if Akos knew anything, she wouldn't find it. He and Cece had never looked much alike.
You too,
Cece said, smiling at Syra. As she was scared of the woman beneath her, the woman she had heard so many rumors about all her life, she didn't show it. Akos carried the painkiller to Syra and touched the vial to her lips. It was hard to look at her. The stitching cloth that covered the left side of her throat and head was deep, red, and crusted over. She was bruise-stained and worn through.
Remind me, Syra said as the painkiller kicked in, to yell at you for coming back.
Whatever you say, Akko said. But he was relieved, because there was his Syra. Jagged as a serrated blade, strong as deadened ice.
She fell asleep.
Well, that's good, Cece said.
Step back, please.
He gave her some room. She was dexterous, to be sure. She pinched the stitching cloth with all the delicacy of someone threading a needle, careful not to brush Cyrus' skin, and pulled it back. It came away from the wound easily. Wet as it was with blood and pus. She dropped it, one soaked strip at a time, on a tray near Syra's head.
So you've been training to be a doctor,
Akko said as he watched her.
It seemed like a good fit for my gift,
Cece said. Ease was her gift. Always had been, even before her current gift came around. But it wasn't her only one, you could see that. She had steady hands and an even temper and a sharp mind. More than just a sweet person with a good disposition, as if anything was just that. When the whole wound was clear of the useless stitching cloth, she poured antiseptic all over it, dabbing at the edges to get rid of dried blood.
I think it's time to apply the silver skin,
Cece said, straightening. It acts like a living creature. You just have to place it properly. And it adheres permanently to the flesh. You'll be fine as long as you can keep your hands steady.
Okay?
I'll cut the strips now. Silverskin was another innovation from Othir, a sterile, synthetic substance that, as Cece said, almost seemed to be alive.
It was used to replace skin that had been damaged beyond repair, mostly burns. It got its name because of its color and texture. It was smooth and had a silver sheen to it. Once put in place, it was permanent. Ceezy cut the strips with care, one for the section of skin just above Syra's ear, one for behind it, and one for her throat. After a beat or two of thought, she went back to make the edges of silver skin curved, like wind through snow, like ice flower petals. Akos put on gloves so the silver skin wouldn't stick to his hands instead of her, and Ceezy handed the first strip to him. It was heavy and cold to the touch, not as slippery as he'd imagined it to be. She helped him position his hands over Cyrus's head. "Lower it straight down," she said, and he did. He didn't have to press it in place. The silver skin rippled like water and buried itself in Cyrus's scalp the moment it found flesh. With Ceezy's clear voice coaching him, Akos placed the rest of the silver skin. Each piece grew together right away, no seams to speak of between the different strips. He acted as Ceezy's hands for the rest of Syra's wounds, too, the gashes on her arm and side covered with stitching cloth, the bruises treated with a healing salve. It didn't take long. Mostly they would heal on their own, and the real trick for her would be forgetting how she got them. There was no stitching cloth for the mind's wounds, real though they were. "That's it," Ceezy said, stripping the gloves from her small hands. "Now you just wait for her to wake up. She'll need to rest, but she should be fine now that she's not losing any more blood." "Thank you," Akos said. "Never thought I would be trying to heal Syra Novak," Ceezy said. "On a transport vessel full of Shotet, no less." She glanced at him. "I can see why you like her, you know." "I feel like..." Akos sighed and sat down at the table next to Syra's head. "Like I just walked right into my fate without meaning to." "Well," Ceezy said, "if you are destined to serve the Novak family, I think you could do worse than the woman who was willing to endure all this just to get you home." "So you don't think I'm a traitor?" "That sort of depends on what she stands for, doesn't it?" Ceezy said. She touched his shoulder. "I'm going to find Ise, okay?" "Sure. What's that look for?" He was suppressing a smile. "Nothing." Akos's memories of the interrogation were hazy, and the edges of them, creeping into his mind, were bad enough on their own, without any of the details to make them more real. Still, he let the memory of Syra in. She had looked like a corpse, with the current shadows making her face look pitted and rotted away. And she had been screaming so loud, every izzet of her resisting. She didn't want to hurt him. If he hadn't told Rizek what he knew about Ise and Ori, maybe she had, just to keep from killing Akos. Not like he would have blamed her. She woke up on the galley table with a twitch and a moan, then reached for him, touching his jaw with her fingertips. "Am I sealed in your memory now?" she said, sluggish. "As someone who hurt you?" The words caught in her throat like she was gagging on them. "The sounds you made. I can't forget." She was crying. Half drunk, too, from the painkiller, but still, crying. He didn't remember the sounds he'd made when she touched him. When Vas forced her to touch him, that was, torturing them both. But he knew she had felt everything he had felt. That was how her gift worked, sending pain both ways. "No. No," Akos said. "What he did to both of us." Her hand came to rest against his sternum, like she was going to push him away, and then she didn't. She brushed her fingers over his collarbone, and even through his shirt he felt how warm she was. "But now you know what I have done," she said, staring at her hand, at his chest, anywhere but his face. "Before, You had only seen me do it to other people. But now you know the kind of pain I have caused people. So many people. Just because I was too much of a coward to stand up to him. She scowled and lifted her hand. Getting you out was the one good thing I have ever done. And now it's not even worth anything. Because here you are again, you idiot. She clutched at her side, wincing. She was crying again. Akos touched her face. When he first met her, he thought she was this fearsome thing. This monster he needed to escape. But she had unfurled, bit by bit, showing him her wicked humor by waking him with a knife to his throat, talking about herself with unflinching honesty, for better or for worse, and loving so deeply every little bit of this galaxy, even the parts she was supposed to hate. She was not a rusty nail, as she had once told him, or a hot poker, or a blade in Rizek's hand. She was a hush flower, all power and possibility, capable of doing good and harm in equal measure. "It is not the only good thing you've ever done," Akos said in plain Thuvazit. It felt like the right language for this moment, the language of his home, which Syra understood but didn't really speak when he was around, like she was afraid it would hurt his feelings. "It's worth everything to me, what you did," he said. Still in Thuvazit. "It changes everything." He touched his forehead to hers so they shared the same air. "I like how you sound in your own language," she said softly. "Can I kiss you?" he said. "Or will it hurt?" Her eyes went wide. Then she said breathlessly, "And if it hurts?" And smiled a little. "Life is full of hurt anyway." Akos's breaths shuddered as he pressed his mouth to hers. He wasn't sure what it would be like, kissing her this way. Not because she surprised him and he didn't think to pull away, but because he just wanted to. She tasted malty and spiced from the painkiller she had swallowed. And she was a little hesitant, like she was afraid to hurt him. But kissing her was touching match to kindling. He burned for her. The ship jerked, making all the bowls and cups clatter against each other. They were landing.
Chapter 31. Syra. I finally let myself think it. He was beautiful. His gray eyes reminded me of the stormy waters of Pitha. When he reached for my cheek, there was a crease along his arm where one wiry muscle met another. His deft, sensitive fingers moved over my cheekbone. His fingernails were stained with yellow powder, from jealousy flowers, I was sure. I was breathless to think of him touching me just because he wanted to. I sat up, slowly, bringing a hand to the silver skin behind my ear. Soon it would adhere to the nerves in what was left of my scalp, and I would be able to feel it like it was my own skin, though it would never grow hair again. I wondered how I looked now, with a little more than half a head of hair. It didn't really matter. He wanted to touch me. "What?" he said. "You're giving me a weird look."
"Nothing," I said. "You just look nice."
It was a silly thing to say. He was dusty, sweaty, and smeared with my blood. His hair and clothes were mussed. Nice wasn't exactly the word for it, but the other ones I thought of were too much, too soon. Still, he smiled as if he understood.
"You do, too."
"I look filthy," I said. "But thank you for lying about it." I braced myself on the edge of the table and pushed to standing. At first I teetered, unsure of my footing.
"Need me to carry you again?" he said.
"That was humiliating and will never happen again."
"Humiliating?" Some people might use another word, he said, like gallant.
Tell you what, I said. Someday, I'll carry you around like a baby in front of people whose respect you're trying to earn, and you can let me know how much you like it.
He grinned.
Deal.
I'll consent to let you help me walk, I said. And don't think I didn't notice the Chancellor of Thuva standing in the next room. I shook my head. I'd love to know the principle of Elmatahak that sanctions bringing your Chancellor to the country of her enemies.
I think it falls under Hulya Tahak, he said with a sigh. School of the stupid.
I held tight to his arm and walked, shuffled really, into the main deck. The transport vessel was small, with a wide observation window at one end. Through it I saw Voa from above, surrounded on three sides by sheer cliffs, and on one by the ocean. Forests spread over the distant hills as far as I could see. Trains, powered largely by wind coming off the water, wrapped around the city's circumference and traveled into its center like spokes in a wheel. I had never ridden in one.
How has Rizek not found us? I asked.
Hologram cloak, Tekka said from the captain's chair. Makes us look like just another Shotet army transport. I designed it myself.
The ship dipped down, sinking through a hole in the rotten roof of some building on the fringes of Voa. Rizek didn't know this part of the city. No one bothered to, really. It was clear that this building in particular had once been an apartment complex, hollowed out by some kind of destructive event, maybe a near demolition, abandoned halfway through. As the ship sank, I saw into half a dozen lives, a bed with mismatched pillowcases in a ripped-apart bedroom, half a kitchen counter dangling from a precipice, red cushions coated in dust and bits of rubble from a destroyed living room. We touched down, and some of the others used a rope rigged to a pulley near the ceiling to cover the hole there with a huge piece of fabric. Light still came through it, making the ship almost glow from the warmth of its patchwork metals, but it was harder now to see into the apartments that had been. The space we were in was half-packed dirt, half-dust-streaked tile. Growing in the cracks of the broken floor were fragile Shotet flowers in gray, blue, and purple. And at the bottom of the steps that had unfolded from the ship's hold, with the angular eyes I remembered from the footage Akos and I had watched together, was Ise Benazit. She was scarred in a way I hadn't imagined. Scarred by a Shotet blade.
Hello, I said to her. I've heard a lot about you.
She said,
likewise.
I was certain of that. She had heard of how I brought pain and death to all that I touched. And maybe she had heard of my supposed madness, too, that I was too insane to speak, like a diseased animal. Making sure that Akos's hand was still on my arm, I stretched out a hand for her to take, curious to see if she would. She did. Her hand looked delicate, but it felt calloused, and I wondered how it had gotten that way. I think we should trade stories, I said, careful. If the renegades didn't already know who she was, it was better not to tell them, for her safety. Somewhere private. Tekka approached us. I almost laughed at the bright eye patch she wore. Though I didn't know her well, it seemed just like her to call attention to the missing eye instead of disguising it.
Syra, she said to me. Good to see you're feeling better.
I stepped away from Akos's steadying hand, so the current shadow spread over my body again. They were so different now, winding around my fingers like tendrils of hair instead of coursing through them like veins. My shirt was stained with blood and sliced open where they had applied the stitching cloth, and I was bruised in more places than I could count. Still, I tried to pretend I had some dignity.
Thank you for coming to get me, I said to Tekka.
I assume, based on our past interactions, that there's something you'd like in return.
We can get to that later, Tekka said, lip curling.
I think it's safe to say our interests align, though. If you want to clean up, there's running water in this building. Hot water. Pick an apartment. Any apartment.